They do, baby.
Yeah. But I wanted to do hood rat stuff for my friend.
Well, you're sorry, hood with me.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
July 31st, high volume shooter, quick patron exclusive episode here. Out here in this desert trying to deal with all this heat, man. It's, you know, July, August, and even September. You really can't do anything outside here in the desert in Arizona. And it's wild. Even the panhandlers can't be outside. Like I'm walking to the grocery store. I got a panhandler drive up on me. He rolls up on me in a car better than I just got out of, mind you. And he's like, hey, brother, rolls his window down. Can you spare a few dollars? Nah, bro, you got gas in a nice car and you pay. Anyway, man, it's wild, man. But we ain't here to talk about that. We'll get right into it like I always do. Draymond Green wants a max contract. And the report is the big three think of themselves as a package deal. Steph, Clay, and Draymond. You want one of us, you have to keep all three of us. Trade them all then. Trade them all. Look, we've got our four rings. Move on to the new blood. No, but could you imagine what you could get for Steph right now on the market? You talk about the Rudy Gobert haul, all this KD talk. What could you get for Steph Curry coming off his fourth ring? I mean, nah, obviously that ain't happening. Now, there's been a lot of backlash on Twitter, and Draymond's such a polarizing subject. If you haven't seen the What Now doc that I released, go check it out. I'm pretty proud of that. It's a nice little video there. I released, when was that, Thursday? I know some of you don't get your notifications on Patreon. You got to check it. They're not great. The app is always a work in progress. It's still kind of like a beta, to be honest with you. You know, now I had been making that before this news came out, but it's still kind of was timely, right? It still hit on the subject. And Draymond, like you know, is just so polarizing, right? But I wanted to read out this tweet from his mom, Mary B., on Twitter. She said, quote, "A lot of you are saying he shouldn't get a max, but guys that hasn't won anything get bread based off potential." And Mary B. kind of made my point for me, right? She said, bread based off potential. And that's exactly what it is. Potential. You pay players on what you project them to be moving forward, not what they have been or have done. We saw it with Kobe late in his career, where Jeannie Buss gave him like a ridiculous extension. He was like 36 already. People were like, whoa, right? And we're like, well, it's Kobe. And obviously, look, Draymond ain't Kobe, right? But what he is he's part of a similar type of legacy with an organization, right? Same championship. Legacy in that vein. So I use that example, but that was one where it was like, well, you don't really need to do that now. Granted, Kobe was much older, but now it sounds like Draymond is going to use Steph to put pressure on the organization. I don't know, man. What if Steph fakes it, right? What if he goes back to Draymond and he's like, hey, Dre, I tried. I sat down with Joe and Bob and they're not budging. So if he did come back to Draymond with that, right, what would Draymond say to Steph? Okay, well then demand a trade. We'll leave together. We'll leave for Charlotte. You know, like what? And I guess the thing is it's not even about the money, is it? It's really not about the money. It's about the status for Draymond. It's about the status at this point, right? He made, what, $250 million on that fitness investment? He has a ton of commercials and sponsorships, right? And then the media stuff. Remember, it's not just the podcast. He also works for TNT. I'm assuming he gets paid handsomely there. And so, you know, he's invested well. It's not about the money. It's about the status. It's about Draymond saying, hey, I'm a max player. That's what it's about, right? I'm sure you've also heard about Zion and how he has a weight stipulation in his new max contract. If he is 295 pounds, combined with his body fat, he loses money. Now, initially, when I read the word, I was like, whoa. I was like, that's kind of like 295. That means he's like, what if he's 290? That's too big. The brother's like 6'6", right? But then the keyword was combined with his body fat. So in other words, if he's 275 at 20% body fat, then he's in violation. So that's a smart move from the Pelicans. And I like how they did that with the body fat percentage, because that's really what it matters. Body composition, right? But I say all that to say, like, if I'm the Warriors, here's how I would sit down with it. I would say, all right, Draymond, if we give you the max, you can't do any media stuff during the season. That's our stipulation. Like, we feel, I know, you know, this, that, like, we feel like it's a distraction. You're not only distracted and it takes time and energy, say less. You're saying things that other teams and opponents can draw value out of. You're giving out intel whether you realize it or not. So no media stuff during the season, and here's the max contract. I'm assuming Draymond would push back and say, well, no, you know, I'm the new media. Absolutely not. So then the Warriors could push back and say, okay, well, let's look at your TNT contract. You make this much from podcast, this much from TNT. Let's subtract that from the contract then. Whatever you're making with that then, let's take it away from what we're paying you, because you can't have both. Now, Draymond, he may not even give them the information on what he's making, you know, with TNT. And if he has to, he doesn't probably have to tell them that. But I just think, like, to come and ask for the max when you have all these other things going on at the same time, that's where I would start the negotiations if I'm the Warriors. I would just let him play out this next season. But the problem is, after next season, it's a player option. And so you can already see the writing on the wall. If they don't extend him here, how does he act next season, right? And then does he opt out because he's like, well, y'all disrespected me. After all I've done, I'm, you know, what does that look like? Is that a distraction? Does he make that a distraction next season? Is he going to try to use that? Like, he's already trying to use Steph and Clay as leverage. Does he now start to become a distraction and talk about it and cause them to worry about a title defense here if they don't extend him now? I'd let him play it out. Let's see what he looks like after one more year of this new media shit and all this, man. Because I think, you know, we go back. I brought this up in that little video. We pulled it out. It was much closer than we'll remember it. If you go back and watch those finals games, it was close, man. And there would have been a completely different narrative right now. It almost, he'd be in a real different spot right now. Again, if Steph, Wiggs, Loon, and these others didn't carry most of the water through these playoffs. The other thing of watching him play out one more year before extending him, it would let us evaluate the roster and the younger guys to see, hey, maybe, like, let's just say Kuminga and Moody both have breakout years. Like, whoa, they've taken steps. Moody's taken two steps, right? Wouldn't that give them more leverage in saying, all right, well, you know, moving forward, you know, like, hey, Steph, I know he's your guy, but this is also a business. You understand this. And we've got these young guys. We're going to have to pay these guys, right? Because to me, and it hasn't been said, but really, if you max Draymond, I don't think you can bring Wiggs back. That's what it sounds like, you know? And I also understand that Steph and Clay, given the choice, will always choose their day one in Draymond Green. You can't blame them. But that doesn't mean that it's the smart choice, because you could argue two-way Wiggs is just now entering his prime at 25, 26 years old. With this new confidence, with this championship swagger, we could get 4 years of all-star Wiggins. You could get, if you extend Wiggins, what are the chances of, let's say there's 4 more years of Wiggins, of him being an all-star caliber player as opposed to Draymond being an all-star caliber player for a 4-year extension for him? Now, I know it's not apples to apples. It's not fair to fully judge Draymond on that status. I get that. But you see my point. So I'd like to see them play it out. But it mind you, Draymond also is being represented by Clutch here. And so we've seen the tactics they've used in the past. And I wouldn't be surprised any of the tactics they use in type of leverage and stuff that Draymond does here. So it's an interesting thing. And I just don't think it's as simple as, well, you pay the man. Again, yeah, for what he's done in the past. And you say, oh, well, the luxury, no. It will cost us another key player or two if they end up maxing Draymond Green. So it's not as simple as we'll just pay him and pay everybody. No, no, no. It will ultimately cost another player, and I think it would be Wiggins. So heard another rumor here as we're filling out this roster that the Warriors are interested in Melo, Carmelo Anthony. I like it, man. I do. Honestly, here's the thing. You play zone and you hide him there, much like we saw with Bielitsa. But here's the thing is, he will go crazy eating off the gravity of the Splash Brothers. Because, you know, and Otto, he started off hot, right? He missed shots. Otto couldn't make a shot in the playoffs, but he still contributed, right? Bielitsa was still reluctant as a shooter, right? We've seen it over and over again. The thing with Melo is, yes, he's accepted himself as a role player at this stage in his career, but he still has a superstar's mental makeup. And a clutch one at that. And so I'm not saying he would play a ton, but when he was on the floor 12, 15 minutes a night as just a sniper, the shots that would be provided in the offense, those three balls, he's become super efficient as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter. And so I'm telling you, he'll have nights where he hits 5 and 6 threes in this offense, given the minutes. Because again, it's that superstar mental makeup where if Steph swings it to him, Clay swings it, whatever, whoever it is, he ain't tripping about who else is on the floor. That's Melo. He letting it go with confidence, with the snake bite release. And then, on top of that, to have him working with Kuminga in the mid-range every day, that triple threat face-up spot we've seen Kuminga kind of find for himself there in Summer League, well, who's the god of that? Who's the god of efficient offense at the elbow? It's Carmelo Anthony, right? Hell, I think Wiseman could even use some of those details and nuances that Melo has in his face-up triple threat game, you know, at the high post there. So, yeah, I can see why there would be interest. Talking about going back and watching how close we narrowly escaped some of these playoff games, I caught Game 6 on NBA TV last week. And, you know, I was thinking that there's an extra juice to a closeout game in the finals. You saw it with the Bucks in the Suns last year or the year before that, and then you saw it in this game where the team that's down, right? You expect more fight out of the team that's down in the closeout game. You're like, all right, the backs against the walls, they're going to be the more hungry team, because that's usually the case in every other scenario. But that closeout game, the team that can close it out, it's so close, they can taste it. And therefore, all of a sudden, they somehow become the hungrier team. I think we've seen that over the history of the NBA Finals. It's the Finals in particular. Because again, it's not just advancing to the next round. Like, the trophy's in the building. The champagne is cold. And so it's like, you've gotten this far. Now you've got all the juice you need. And we saw that in that Game 6. And I was just watching it late, you know, like I said at the beginning of the series, I was like, look, Boston, they're going to have to go small. They're going to have to go small at some point. And they never did. They never did. They left Al on an island with Steph in almost all the pivotal moments in that playoff series. And then the other thing was, if you're going to leave Al on the floor because he is your leader, stop cucking the switch. They were just yielding the switch. They're like, all right, Al, get out there. 35 feet, baby. Get down in the stance. Look, Steph did what Steph did, but I think part of his confidence and swagger as the series went on was like he realized, yo, they really gonna leave this dude out here on an island on me. Shit, high-key disrespectful. I loved that Kerr called Bob Myers up to the mic. That was a cool moment on stage to give Bob Myers his flowers and acknowledge him, and that was top of mind for Kerr. I thought that was really cool. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll rerun that back, but I rewatched the celebration and stuff, and it was dope. You get a different perspective rewatching this stuff without the emotions involved, knowing the outcome. You catch more details. So we signed a big, Trevion Williams, 6'9", 255, and everything Wiseman's not. Great hands, timing, and feel. So it's an Exhibit 10 contract, just like Mac McClung's. It's basically an invitation to camp and the opportunity to win a roster spot. I'm sure by now you've probably seen, you know, people have put a ton of highlight packages together from Purdue and the Summer League where he was with Boston. he looks to be a great example of basketball athletic. I'm sure his combine numbers were trash, or damn near trash. You know, he went undrafted. I'm pretty sure they weren't great. Like shuffle, lateral speed, all that vert stuff. But you put him in a game of hoops, and he knows how to use his attributes, right? So, of course, I like it. He's a big, and it seems like it's a gift from Milhovich, right? Jokic's coach, our new big man coach. He seems like the perfect diamond in the rough for him when you look at his skill set and his passing and the fundamentals, right? And it's like now the Warriors, they've invested in this infrastructure, this development staff. And the trick is to find these cutties. Find these cutties. Find these diamonds in the rough. Now, obviously, every organization is looking for these guys, but I don't think they're necessarily looking for the same archetypes. So, for instance, he was in Boston Summer League, but Boston, they've got Rob, Grant, Al, right? They bring in Gallinari. They're probably looking for guards. So despite him impressing for them, they're like, well, we're loaded in the front court. We got to take a chance or develop or look at a guard. Some teams in their draft process evaluating him probably said, well, you know, a post player, let's look at this 3-and-D wing. So I think the chances of him being a real find is greater because of his position and style. He's not the type of player teams are looking for right now in the league. So it's easier for him to slip through the cracks. Like, good luck finding a steal on a 3-and-D wing. You know, like, it ain't happening. Like, everybody's hunting for those, right? And then again, with Milhovich, they may look at his throwback game. You know, he's kind of a bruiser and stuff and say, well, under his eye, he could probably become way more than what he would be within another franchise and organization. So, yeah, it's going to be an intriguing battle for camp for these final roster spots here. I still want a true big, but, I mean, he's physical. He's physical strong. I mean, you guys have seen the tape, right? High post passer, great hands and feel, timing, can pop the three. The question will be defense and lateral speed. But, again, they've dealt with this with Looney. So, yeah, it makes sense. Last subject that I wanted to touch on here before I got into a couple mailbag questions was Boston trying to get KD for Jaylen Brown. It's no secret. Boston has this long history of racism and treating their players poorly. So it's just interesting. You would think they would be more conscientious about this stuff. Look, and what they did, trying to make the trade is not that. But I'm just saying the context of the organization, it's recent memory. It was the Isaiah Thomas fiasco, right? That turned a lot of players off to Boston. You remember it put them out of the AD race. And so you just think they would move with a little more finesse. Look, the Warriors made the call for Kevin Durant, right? But yet it never came out who they actually offered. The Warriors moved with finesse. What if it came out? Oh, the Warriors offered Wiggins and Wiseman directly. You know, whatever the case, I know that hypothetically doesn't work, but you see what I'm saying? Why let it get to that? I don't know. They did. So for whatever reason, it was let out that they not just made a call and were seeing if they could acquire him. It was Jaylen Brown that they offered. And obviously he was offended. He took to social media about it. That said, you trade Jaylen Brown for KD every day of the week. But we'll see. We'll see what type of chemistry develops with Boston next season. You add Brogdon, who I think understands his role, but at the same time, Brogdon is a lead ball handler. He's an alpha in himself, right? Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. It was funny. I saw this clip of Jaylen Brown working on his hops. He was doing all this weightlifting and plyometrics in a pool. And it was just like, bro, that's a mistake. That is a mistake. And you see it so often. Players focusing on their strengths and what they like to do. Look, I'm sure Jaylen Brown does his skill work. I'm sure he has a whole routine. He's in the gym. He does his skill work. He's shooting. And then he does this. But double down. Double down on your ball handling. You don't need to spend a minute working on your bounce and athleticism. Not right now. Not at 25 years old. It's silly. And on that same note, when's the last time you've seen KD in a weight room? Or on a beach doing plyometrics or something like that? KD, at this stage in his career, he'd be better suited working on his body, prolonging his career, strengthening his body, right? And I see it all the time in the offseason where guys, you only have so much energy. It's finite. I've given the speech so many times, right? But double down on your weaknesses. Everybody wants to lean into their strengths. Whenever you see KD working out, what's he doing? middies, hezzies, Jaylen Brown working on your bounce. That's what you need to correct, my guy. That's it. If you gain 3 inches to your vert next season, that's it. That's the sky's the limit now. That's the next step for you. It's just weird to me. Anyway, I'll wrap this up with a couple of questions, starting off here from Candace. She said, I've heard people cite Clay as having the best or most textbook shooting form. So I've been watching video of Clay, and I'm noticing that he usually gets three-point shots off a hair quicker than his mid-range jumper. I'm just trying to learn more about the game, so I'm wondering why he might have a slight hesitation in his mid-range. Is it a calibration thing or deceiving defender thing? My second question is, what's your favorite memory as a Warrior fan? So to me, Candace, the midi is a different beast. A lot of guys shoot it on the way down or fading. Because most of the time when you get to the elbow or you're getting to the mid-range, it's downhill or you're moving with velocity, right? And so when you hard stop at the mid-range, you've got all this momentum and energy in your legs. And in order to control that energy, you let it go a beat late so you don't overshoot the ball. If you just rise right up into a mid-range with all that energy in your legs, it's tough. It's tough to have touch from that distance. And so you're kind of controlling the elevation. And then the other aspect of it would be most mid-range shots are contested. So, yeah, it does have to do with the defender in the sense of the lean, a recline, or a fade. You're usually having to shoot it over a contest as well. But, yeah, I think most shooters, if you want to quote the word shooter, they've got different shots for different spots. Corner, it's usually damn near a free throw. Not much movement there. Mid-range, again, you're gonna get a lot of leg and some fade and maybe a late release, right? And then you may have your standard off-the-bounce shot that's your standard shot. As for favorite Warrior memory, man, that's like choosing between your kids, right? You know, there's so many, but I probably have said this one before. Off top, it's that game six in Houston. It's that game six in Houston where KD had gone down. They go into Houston and take out Chris Paul and Harden in Houston, and Steph is in the back screaming, kick me out the gym again, boy. Kick me out the gym again, boy. Because the story goes, Steph had gone to, what is it, the Toyota Center down there in Houston? The day before, Steph went in there to get some shots up, and Chris Paul had him kicked out of the gym. And so he showed up game six, and it was so shocking and so satisfying at the same time. There's a YouTube video of me reacting after. Looney showed up, Clay hit the dagger, Steph went crazy, and it was just shocking and satisfying all at once. Little did we know how the rest of that playoff run was going to go, man. All right, a couple voicemails here. Again, I'll set up a new link for this, and I'll probably open the mailbag up to Twitter here soon. Let me see what I got.
Hey, Alec, it's Brian again, and I just want to ask for your advice when it comes to basketball. So basically, I'm an undersized guard, just like Steph Curry, which has a strong base, so you cannot move him, and has a solid defense, also solid screens, but that's just about it. So I have zero offense besides screening. So basically, I want to ask what direction or what skill should I take on or learn first? Is it shooting? Because, you know, I really want to drive, but when I'm driving, I get blocked because of my size. But, you know, I could usually blow by guys with my strength. So that's my confusion. So what skill should I learn first? Is it shooting? Is it floater or just finishing around the rim? You know, just basically easy first step to elevate my game from being just that guy that screens and defense. So that's it, and thanks.
All right, Brian, you know I love these questions. This is the heart of what I love to talk about and do. So I'm gonna shoot straight with you. To learn to shoot as an adult is tough. You ain't gonna be a shooter, Brian. You ain't gonna be a shooter. Now, you could pick some spots. I would say elbows, free throw line and in, maybe the corners, right? And get some spots. And I'm not saying don't work at it. Like, you're gonna have to be able to knock some shots down. But listen to your instincts. You want to drive. That's your instincts and you're good. You're strong at that. And so what I would say is you got to learn to finish off 2 feet and 1 foot. 2 feet, the hard plant, find the body, bump and flip, shut. You know, that's going to probably come more natural to you. Now, you say you get your shot blocked. If you're coming in with 1 foot, you take your first step. On your second step, go find the defender's body. Lunge into them, use your shoulder, try to find their body on that second step. And then as you plant, bounce off and finish there. But what I would say is focus on finishing. So stand under the basket when you go to practice and just learn the English of the backboard. Spin the ball, flip it all sorts of angles, get comfortable with your offhand and learning to finish and play the glass. As long as your attention span can do it, focus on that. And then if you have a training partner or someone, you can figure how to finish with contact. Again, that second step, if you're finishing off 1 foot, your second step is when you'll find the body and then you kind of bounce off and finish. If you go to jump and hop off two, if you're a two-footed jumper, then you take that plant, then it becomes more about pump fakes and then finding contact is easier. But again, you got to have the English to use the glass. And then after you do that 15, 20 minutes just under the basket, I know it's not the sexiest of things to do, you know, in an open gym, then back out to the floater. And I would just double that. It's funny, right? Because I was talking about, you know, working on your weaknesses, right? But just double down on being a finisher, because the journey to really being a comfortable shooter, it's something that really starts as a kid. So, I mean, I'm not saying don't take open ones, and I'd work around the free throw line area with a set shot, because as a shooter, you know, free throw line and in, you don't have to have the greatest mechanics, because it's just the distance isn't there. There's just different ways to get it there. You can flick it, you can flip it, you can push it, right? But as you step out towards the three-point line, now your mechanics really come into play. I hope that answers it for you, Brian.
Hey, Alk, I got a really important question to ask you. It's been kind of puzzling me for a while, so I was just wondering if you can answer it. Anyways, fuck, marry, kill. Skip Bayless, Brian Windhorse, or Nick Wright? Thanks for the content, man. Appreciate it.
I love the delivery. That was masterful delivery there, Tyler, man. Look, Wendy ain't that bad. Wendy knows who he is, right? Wendy keeps it real. There's no fluff. There's no except for that, you know, he had his big moment on TV, I guess. But Wendy's fine to me. He keeps it real. Nick, while he is a culture vulture, much like Skip, and is extremely annoying, he is talented, right? Like, Nick Wright is talented. And Skip's just a joke. You see how I answered that, right? So, Wendy, all right. Nick's talented. Skip's a joke. But I appreciate the question. I like the delivery.
Hey, Alk, I'd like to hear your ultimate 15-man rotation, or roster, I should say, from the Warriors dynasty. So from their first chip to their latest chip, and which version or year of each player you'd like. Cheers.
Oh, shit. So that's a loaded question there, Jake. I did re-listening to again. I didn't catch the which year version would you like. So I'll try to add that. I have my list of 15, but I didn't think about the year. But some of them, it's kind of self-explanatory because their stays weren't that long. So Steph, fuck it. I'm going to go this year. I'm going to go 2022 Steph. Bully Steph. Clay, you know, I mean, let's go 19 Clay post in, or pre-injury, right? No shade, but I mean, that is what it is. At the three, I'm going Andrew Wiggins. I'm going this year Andrew Wiggins in the starting lineup. At the four, I'm going 2017 KD. So the first year he arrived. At the five, let's go defensive player of the year Draymond Green. Was that 16? I think it was 16, right? Let's go 16 Draymond. That was the Draymond that hit five threes in the finals, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. So, starting lineup, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, KD, Draymond. Off the bench, let's go Andre, youngest version possible, so 15 Andre. 17 JaVale McGee. 17 Sean Livingston. Jordan Poole this year. Harrison Barnes, how about the Sacramento version? Now, I guess we got to use the Warriors version. So the Warriors version was at 16, right? Barbosa, 16. I'm going to throw David Lee in there. So that makes it the 15. It gets a little confusing here. David Lee, David West. He was only with, was he with us for 2 years? So 17, 18, it doesn't matter. He was the same guy. Let's go GP2 and Otto. So there's a lot of guys here from the current roster, honestly. More than I had suspected. Maybe I feel like I'm admitting somebody. Oh, I didn't put Loon on there. That's cold. That's cold, man. No, I guess Loon's got to go over. Loon's got to be in there. Loon's got to be in there over Lee or Otto. I don't know how I did Loon wrong. That was the, I knew, I felt like I was admitting somebody, but that's my list. All right, one more question here and then we'll wrap this up.
Hey, Alk. I'm not sure if you've answered this question before, but on Twitter, you have, what, roughly 4,000 followers, and there are current NBA players with fewer followers than that. Have you ever been contacted by any current NBA players who've asked you, like, any particular questions? And if not, how do you feel knowing that you have more fans than dudes who have pursued their basketball dreams and presumably you wanted to end up in the NBA? And they have ended up in the NBA. But more people like you because you are funny and interesting and relatable than they are. One example I can point to who I just Googled is Carlo Matkovich, who plays for the Pels. Yeah, that's my question. Thanks for everything you do.
That's an interesting question, James. I've never had a player reach out to me. I've had little like interactions with guys, Bazemore, Jamal Crawford here and there. But I don't clout chase. Y'all know me. Like, I don't tag guys just for, you know. I'll talk my shit, but I talk it to people that are following me. But, you know, I think a lot of these guys could care less about social media attention, you know, or they don't want to deal with the back and forth because it does take energy. As your following grows, you know, the more questions, responses, DMs you get, and there is a requirement. Now, some guys have a, you know, someone that runs their accounts, right? But I think also a lot of these players tune out social media because, frankly, they don't want to hear the criticism. And I think you have to know yourself. If you're some people, you know, the old saying, you need a pat on the back or a kick in the ass, right? Because, I mean, we know Steph infamously uses social media for motivation. So I think a lot of guys just avoid it for various reasons. But then you have the guys that are all about their brand, right? And it's like I saw, I saw Brad Beal put out a picture with his pregnant wife. Now, maybe to be fair to Brad Beal, maybe it was his wife that wanted to do this, but I was just like, ain't no way. I don't care how rich and famous I am. I ain't putting this picture out. Like, why? Anyway, but it's just interesting because it almost goes in the opposite of how you would think, because the guys that have that are on social media more and have the social media presence and following. Now, granted, it's because if you're LeBron James, you're going to have a billion followers. It doesn't matter, right? But they tend to focus on their branding and the money and all that. When some of these other guys, these lesser known guys that are just maybe role players on the fringe of the NBA, maybe they should focus more on building their brand in social media just financially, right? But, you know, listen, social media numbers are phony, man. And, you know, whether you're looking at Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, I do pride myself on growing organically and authentically. There ain't no bots here because, you know, you could buy followers and you can see it with, there's a lot of accounts, whether it be Twitter or YouTube or wherever, that do what I do. They've covered the NBA and they'll have, you know, 100,000 plus followers, right? And when they tweet something, they get 3 likes and one comment. So, you know, I'm definitely grateful for the support and engagement. All right, I'm not sure how long this one ran here. Again, I'll fresh link the SpeakPipe for a voicemail and do some more mailbox stuff. Moving forward through the off season, I plan to have some guests on the pod to open up the conversation, perhaps get out of just basic NBA talk and just have some fun until we can get into training camp, where, again, it looks like we're going to have some battles for a roster spot. This is High Volume Shooter. I'm out, y'all.